Hello, everybody. It is
1 week
from the NBA draft deadline,
and we are 1 week away on the Half Court Press podcast from having breaking news about Creighton basketball players.
Hello, everybody. I'm Sam McEwen along with Joel Lorenzi, back from the Chicago and the NBA Combine. Was that fun?
Yeah, no, it was great. Just seeing all the important faces in there. I mean, being like 10 feet from Jerry West. Like, I try not to fan out in these spaces, but you see Jerry West, and like, that's kind of cool, right? Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? So, so many important decision makers in that building. It's just, it really not only humbles you, but shows you, like, hey, you're here, and this is an important space. And I think everybody in that building gets that sense, especially players. So,
did you go up to him and go, hello, Mr. Logan?
Hell no, no. We kept our distance. You know, there's separation between like media and even like college coaches versus like team executives and GMs. Like, they got their own section. They all sit in, executives that is. So I was around a few college coaches, you know, Bill Self, Jamie Dixon, that type. So
Bill Self's a pretty prominent coach.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the best. So we're going to talk about on the podcast today. We're going to talk about Joel being in Chicago for the Combine. He talked to Ryan Kalkbrenner. He talked to Trey Alexander. Did you talk to Kaluma or no?
No, not really.
Okay, so Kaluma was there too, but he's not going to come back to Creighton most likely. But we can talk a little bit about him. Kalkbrenner and Alexander both have decisions to make. And they have legitimate decisions to make.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Casey and Nebraska on this podcast, but Casey's not probably going to go to the NBA. We'll talk a little bit about that and where Nebraska stands. Going into sort of that final week. But we're going to talk mostly about Creighton, the two decisions that are in front of them. We're going to have another podcast after the decision, so like next Thursday. But we can talk a little bit about what does this mean if these guys come back? What does this mean if they decide to stay in the draft? We'll do a little bit of that here today. Then we'll talk a little Huskers. There's not a ton to talk about there other than Casey's decision and then just kind of where the roster is. They are still kind of... they're kicking the tires on adding another player. I'm not sure they should, but I think they're still looking at that. They missed out on a guy who decided to go to Texas Tech. He would have been okay. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Want to remind everybody to listen to our other podcast, both the Pick Six and the Even Field podcast, where the focus is on women's sports. So that's a good one to listen to, as well as Pick Six. Also, you can subscribe to the Omaha World Herald. 1 week. I'm sorry, not 1 week. $1 for 26 weeks. Today is May 24th, so that's going to take you through the first 2 weeks of the basketball season. Who's Creighton playing the first 2 weeks? Do you remember?
No.
Playing anybody good? When are they playing Iowa? When is this Gavitt game against the Hawks?
I don't know if a date was announced.
It's probably early, though, right?
It's, I got to imagine it's November.
Okay, well, then you're going to get the Creighton-Iowa basketball game inside, what's it now, CHI? You get coverage of that. So you get 6 months, a buck, get all the football too for those Husker fans out there who like Creighton basketball. We know you exist. All right, Joel, let's get to it. So you're in Chicago last week. We will not recount or recap the amount of time it took to get a pass to the Combine, but we did, yeah. And you were there for a couple of days. First, I want you to kind of just walk through what that experience is like of going to the NBA Combine. Very few people know about that. Most people do know the NFL Combine, but they don't know the NBA Combine, yeah. What's going on, and then we'll go into each individual player. So we'll start with this. You're at the NBA Combine in Wintrust Arena where DePaul plays. Mm-hmm. What is it like?
Yeah, and I've been to the NFL Combine, so I can kind of compare and contrast the two.
Okay.
The NFL Combine is real. I mean, that's become such a – not to say the NBA Combine isn't a staple, but I think it's transitioned into something now where it's mostly second-round guys and guys trying to break their way into a certain projection range where, a lot of the, per se, not important guys, but the lottery guys and whoever knows they're guaranteed probably first-rounders, they're not playing. They're not playing in that.
That's going to change in 2 years, right?
Yes. They'll have to participate in some of that stuff. Maybe not scrimmages, but certainly drills and whatnot. And of course, these guys, I think, still got measured, the lottery guys, and they're there to be interviewed, but they're not playing. They're telling their agents, like, yo, I'm not going to no scrimmages, obviously. It's just, you go South Loop area to where DePaul plays, and it's connected to the Marriott Marquis there. So you can go, you're in the hotel, you're seeing players, coaches, executives, whoever, agents, and then you walk through the Sky Bridge kind of, and then it takes you right to DePaul's arena. And then when you get in there, you know, and for those who have been to Wintrust, you know, it's a pretty cool gym. Just never really full,
right?
Because obviously DePaul plays there. So when you go there, there's, you know, your ground level section per se, and then the section above. Nobody's really in the section above when you go there, but it's like there are like blotches of people scattered across the gym. You got your executives, you know, along the sideline, behind the benches. That's GMs. That's you know, president of basketball ops, like everybody important you can imagine there. Joe Dumars, right. Everybody. Then you scattered, you'll see, you know, ESPN on set with Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks and Malika Andrews. And then you go over here and you see LaPhonso Ellis. And then you got all your writers. You got everybody you can imagine would be in the NBA space. It's probably there. Even head coaches are there. You know, Ime Udoka. I think I saw Monty Williams. Tibbs was sitting like two rows in front of me both days. So you'll see everybody there. And when you think about it, I mean, obviously guys are trying to find gems, but I thought it was pretty interesting because when you think about the actual scrimmages, there are only probably like two or three people that are actually first rounders going into that whole thing. And maybe they play themselves out of the first round. Maybe somebody plays themselves into the first round. I thought a few people maybe not play themselves into the first round, but play themselves into pretty good draft position. I'm not sure any of the Creighton guys are among those people, but they had each of them, I think, had one performance where it was like, okay, like they made some noise.
What's the caliber of plays really high?
It was probably better than last year. It wasn't super crazy. I think between individual performances, you see some pretty good basketball. I thought Sonogo was pretty good over those 2 days, showing some stuff that maybe we hadn't seen from him. But overall, I don't think the basketball is crazy. You got this mix of kind of like guys, because they're hearing all week between interviews and whatever, what the teams and executives want to see from them before they're, you know, actually betting on them.
Right.
So like, for example, like Trey, they want to see him on the ball more. They want to see him be a combo guard. So you kind of have that in the back of your head as you're going out there, but you're playing alongside, let's say you start playing alongside four guys who also are hearing stuff like that.
The same thing, right.
And then a bench. And these coaches, even everybody's kind of auditioning, players, coaches, everything. So even the coaches that are, you know, putting these teams out there, they're doing certain substitutions. And so you don't really have control over that either. So like one team might platoon and the other might, you know, it's different. And so all this is happening while you as an individual player are trying to maybe showcase some of that stuff while also not damaging your current image and showing that you could still do some of the stuff that people thought you could. So there's a lot that goes into it. So like Kalkbrenner's quote in my story, like he said, like it's difficult. I don't know if it's more difficult for a big man, but it is probably difficult for a big man if they're expecting you to shoot or something like that, and that's not who you are yet. Probably like him. So there's so much that goes into it. So I wouldn't say that caliber of play is too high because I think some of the stuff is in the back of their minds, and it's not they might run sets. They do run sets, but it's not the most organized thing. Obviously, these guys don't. A lot of them hadn't played together with each other all year. So
let's get into it. Trey Alexander, we'll go with him first, then we'll get to Kalkbrenner. So Alexander, you wrote the story last week on Trey. I thought some of his comments were pretty eye-opening because what we have discussed prior to up till now is that most people in the NBA have Trey as a pick next year, potentially even a first-round pick.
Yeah, first-rounder next year.
So maybe they're getting 40. A look at him to see what he has to work on. But Trey's, you know, and maybe this is something he has to say in this moment or try to think as a competitor, it sounds like he'd really love some team to tell him to stay in.
Yeah, I think he really is leaning into this NBA thing. Just from what I understand from the way his agency has proceeded and kind of the way things have unfolded, it feels like he's that fisherman out by the lake sitting there for 10 hours, and he's really, really – he's hoping. He'd rather hope he gets one small bite before he goes back home empty-handed. And so, obviously, he stands to benefit from another year. We're talking, like you said, first-round projections. And I look at a guy like Kobe Bufkin. He's drawn a lot of comparisons to him. Kobe Bufkin is a first-rounder, or at least a projected first-rounder. And this is a guy that people say trade.
That's Bufkin from Michigan, from not Michigan. Brown from Missouri.
Yes. People say Trey fits that mold, and they got similar numbers and measurements, and they could probably do similar things. Should Trey go back to school next year? And so he stands, and I acknowledge that. We talked about that, and I was like, yo, like, as much as I know you probably want to stay in this process, like, most people, or many people at least, see you as a guy, probably one of the guys who benefit most from another year. And he, I don't want to say push it aside, but he was like, yeah, I'm hearing a lot of that too. But, you know, if I can get a team to bet on me now and tell me that, hey, we're gonna play you early in your career instead of, you know, because I think it is a hassle for some guys who know themselves and know what they're capable of. I mean, it's a guy whose life could change a year from now.
Yeah.
He knows, like, hey, I don't want to be in somebody's farm system in their G League buried in the deep abyss of that league. And then, of course, too, getting drafted is a priority for him. Kalkbrenner made no mention of that, but getting drafted is a priority for Trey. He wants to hear his name called. He wants to be one of those top 60 because it does, even if you are 60 versus maybe somebody who gets undrafted, depending on the organization, because obviously some organizations are crossing their fingers hoping somebody goes undrafted so they can get in good with them.
Right.
A top 60, you know, getting picked still means something. It gives you a certain amount of, you know, you feel better about things and maybe your trajectory and whatnot. So he still wants to be drafted. So unless it's not like, you know, like I may mention a team could say, oh, we hope you slip out of the draft. And if you're there after 60, like, we're snatching you up, no question, because we feel like you're a diamond in the rough or whatever. He doesn't want to go through that, from what I understand. He wants to be picked. So if a team isn't guaranteeing him a draft spot by next week, I'm pretty confident he'll come back.
His value to Creighton is very high. You know, he's a guy that can score. Well, he can score at all three levels, and that's helpful. But as I think about Creighton, as I think about the moments last season when they really needed something, there are a couple moments in there where Kaluma made the play. I mean, Kaluma made the play against Providence, and he made the shots against St. John's. Yeah, yep. He might have made one against Villanova too. I can't remember here in Omaha, but
yeah.
But most of the time, Trey was a guy that was getting the clutch bucket. Or, you know, and Baylor hit a couple of threes. But a lot of times, Baylor would hit threes early, or he'd get them going, but it was Trey that often got the defining basket. So he's enormously important.
Yeah. And he'll be almost impossible to replace at this point.
Is there a number where, like, if somebody said, because teams have numbers, right, like, of where they're drafting, but when you say it's in the hands of the teams, and you said this off the podcast before we started recording, what do you mean by that? Like, what you mean it's when you say that, what do you mean it's in the hands of the teams? What Trey might do?
Yeah, because they have to tell him, hey, we're going to pick you here. There's only so much he could do, especially after the kind of week he had in Chicago. And
how was his week? How good did he play?
The first game, I thought he was pretty good, but I think he only really showed them who he'd already been. I'm not sure how much he showed scouts. I don't remember his assist numbers, but they weren't very high between the 2 days. I think that's mostly what scouts wanted to see. They wanted to see him on the ball, not just, you know, getting to his own spots, but putting others in their spots and you know, playmaking. So
for all they did last year, for all that Creighton did, it still feels like the game that most defines that young recruiting class is the one that Nembhard didn't play in and the one where Kalum and Alexander were stars, and that was the Kansas game 2 years ago.
Maybe.
Because why would they say that to him? Like, he didn't play that position this year. They were a better team this year. But when did he play that position? When they played Kansas 2 years ago.
Yeah.
When did Kaluma have his best game? Against Kansas 2 years ago. Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. If it tells you what, like, I'm sure scouts still look at that Klum and go, if we get that guy will draft. The guy that played this year, we don't know. But the guy that played against Kansas, like, if Kaluma gets drafted, which he might, somebody's going to point out what he did against Kansas.
Sure.
That's going to be his defining game. And Trey was on the ball. That's the role he played against Kansas.
Yeah, and as much as, you know, Creighton tried to fuse that with who he mostly showed this past year, like, mm-hmm. some on ball here, you know, there were lineups where he was the definitive point guard because the next guard would be, like, Farabello.
When Nembhard was on the bench,
yes,
resting for 2 minutes,
but Nembhard still played a ton of minutes. Oh, yeah. So never really that opportunity. And I think that's kind of what next year would give him. But at the same time,
because they're not going to hand the ball to Ashworth the way they did Nembhard.
I think Ashworth is probably just better off the ball. Yeah. So I think there are scenarios where he doesn't have to always bring it up. He doesn't have to always be in the pick and roll as good as he is in the pick and roll. He's such a good shooter coming in. That there are a ton of half-court scenarios where he could just be off the ball.
Sure.
Now, whether you feel that maximizes your offense, whether you're better off most of the time with Trey being in the pick-and-roll instead of Ashworth, or there has to be a 50-50, 60-40 split,
sure.
That's up to the staff and what they see this summer. But Trey will have that opportunity. But considering, you know, this summer, the week he had in Chicago, which I didn't think he showed too much of that, and then his pro day, of course, I'm not sure if – I don't think it passed yet. I think it's coming up this week sometime in L.A. He's with Wasserman. Interestingly enough, Kobe Bufkin is with Wasserman too. So they'll both – I don't know if – I'm sure Bufkin will do some stuff on Pro Day, but I don't know how much of that – even though you get to kind of arrange that yourself as an agency and kind of cater to what you want to show the executive to show up, I'm not sure how much that changes opinions on him. Because I think a lot of people are fixed on, hey, go back another year and do it for the length of a college season. So that, I think that's what we're looking at for Trey Alexander. But a team, I heard some teams. I'm not sure. I don't know. The range I'm looking at in the second round, it would feel like he would have to get picked in the mid-40s, which feels almost impossible right now because you're picking him over some guys that probably raised some eyebrows in Chicago and already had their status. So,
and Kaluma, it's gonna get picked. If he stays in, he'll get picked.
Sure,
great upside.
It would be one of the last few picks for sure.
Sure, maybe.
But he didn't have a great week in Chicago. I thought
he should go to Nebraska.
Hey man, stop! You got to stop this agenda, man. You got people in our mentions talking crazy. It is an agenda. It's something.
It's your reaction to it.
Yeah. But his first game was probably one of the, dare I say, worst games of the week. Like, his first game, it felt eerily similar to, what was that, Arkansas? The Arkansas game in Maui where he was constantly trying to ISO and it just found its way out of bounds time and time again or just into the other team's hands. It wasn't pretty. Now, the second game, started getting to the line, you know, he had probably the dunk of the combine, but I don't know. It would have been incredibly. He probably would have needed a 20-point game to match that first day.
Kalkbrenner, great interview with him. I thought, you know, he sounded confident in who he is as a defender. Obviously, they wanted him to shoot the three. I think, according to your story, he made one, which was luck.
It was a bank three.
Yeah.
Almost perfectly bank three, but it's not like a bank three. Like, I shot it too hard from a straight on top of the, like, above the break. This was, like, on the wing, like, nasty, like, Tim Duncan, like, hey, I banked a three. I don't know if he planned for that, but it went in.
It did.
His one attempt.
So, you know, according to your story, they wanted to see him as a three-point shooter.
Yes.
They wanted to see if he could do other defensive things.
Yeah.
His interview seemed pretty confident, but you mentioned that he's not talking about getting drafted. So what do you feel like the feedback he got this week would have looked like, and what are the likelihoods of him returning?
I think higher. I think which with Trey Alexander, I get this feeling like he really, if he didn't have to, he really doesn't want to come back. Not because of anything Creighton or anything like that. I haven't gotten that sense. But I think he's worked for this thing all his life, and he's mm-hmm. gotten so close. Like, he's a hair away. I think he can feel that from the sense I've gotten. And to get so close and have to, you know, come back down to reality, it's not ideal, man, for most people at least. But Kalkbrenner, I think Kalkbrenner is a guy who just wants to get better anywhere. And I think Trey, there's a lot of that in Trey too. But I think Kalkbrenner genuinely doesn't care whether he ends up back at Creighton or he ends up with one of those teams in the back of the draft, frankly, because there probably isn't a super big difference either. He's competing for some type of role with one of these teams at the back half of the draft next year, or he's starring in his role and probably trying to compete for similar range in next year's draft, probably late 40s, early 50s.
The only difference is he can make a Final Four if he comes back, and he never will make a Final Four if he doesn't.
So
that's a big deal, right?
Sure. I think he's less hung up on the NBA now thing. Sure. Like, I think he wants to do what's best for the next step in his journey. And like it obviously there's a difference between him and Trey. Trey could probably be a first rounder after a great year. Ryan Kalkbrenner, kind of like we were talking about Fiji and whatever Dasani before the podcast.
Yeah, we're talking about water.
Kalkbrenner is an acquired taste for teams. A great drop big now. Potential to probably shoot. I know a lot of the comps are like Brook Lopez. And with some of those, I think those are interesting because not only is Brook Lopez a good drop big, but Brook Lopez is one of the best defenders in the NBA. So you're putting a lot of high hope on Kalkbrenner.
Yeah, Brook Lopez is a really good player.
And he's a knockdown shooter. I was actually in a building, funny enough, when Brook Lopez set the record for most three-point attempts in a game without a make. I think he went 0 for 12 that night from three. So not really a characteristic to the comparison.
Oh, but I mean, he was like the second or third pick in the NBA draft when he came out.
Way back when. And back then, he was a post scorer. I mean, he's still the Brooklyn Nets all-time leading scorer because he was so skilled inside and had mid-range going for him. He was a completely different player back then. completely different player back then.
Yeah, he's good.
Kalkbrenner, I think, because of the potential in the shooting, because, like, don't get me wrong, Kalkbrenner's worked on his shot, but he hasn't had shooting coaches per se. They haven't worked around the clock on his jumper, I don't think, at any point in his career, because he's been mostly a shot blocker. And so I think there are teams confident.
Greg can hire his son to come in and teach him.
It doesn't work like that.
I understand that it doesn't. I'm not saying that it actually works like that. I'm saying that, like, there are people around Creighton's program that know what that's like.
Yeah.
They can get better at it. And by the way, Doug McDermott has turned himself into.
Yeah, if he was a wing, I think maybe it would work. But I think the mechanics are so different for a guy who's 7'1", like an actual 7'1". And it would take – I mean, there are organizations out there that could ruin his jumper, really. Like, I think you go back to Giannis's jump shot his rookie year. It was so fluid. Like, if Giannis had a jumper today, we wouldn't be talking about Jokic at all. Like, there would be no conversation. This dude would be sweeping through the playoffs. And so there are organizations that could ruin his jumper, which is probably irrelevant now. But I say that to say there are organizations. He is an acquired taste. There are organizations that probably feel like, hey, we can bring you in here. You could be a Brook Lopez. You're already – we don't have to do too much with you defensively. We maybe get you against some NBA guards and wings and see how well you switch. But we see how good of a shot blocker you are. We see how good of a drop defender you are. There's room to improve you. But I think regardless, this year or the next, it's going to take an acquired taste to draft him. He's going to be probably back half of the draft again.
How many NBA players, even centers, can't score from beyond 10 feet with any regularity?
They're probably all mostly backup big men. And even the ones I come to think of are probably insanely skilled when you get them in empty gym, like a Mason Plumlee or
I wouldn't think, I don't know, him.
A Zubac, or like these guys even have, I guess, middies if it came down to it, I guess.
I think my point is that, like, Kalkbrenner is, you know, if to play in the NBA, don't you kind of have to score a little further away?
And
not 1987.
Even then, I think you have to be able to not just find your position to score with angles and whatever, like Kalkbrenner does. You probably are going to have to show a post-up or two, or, you know, be able to take advantage of a mismatch.
I agree. You think there's a good chance he comes back?
I think so. I'm not ruling out Trey coming back. I think Trey is probably 60-40 he comes back.
Sure.
Maybe 50-50 because I think he's just waiting. If I had to guess, I think he's waiting on a team. But like I said, the range of teams that I think are probably talking to him, it feels impossible for him to get drafted there right now. Unless he had the most godly pro day, he set a different type of tone for pro day that we've never seen ever. And then Kalkbrenner, the teams that I understand that he was interviewing with, he mentioned the Bucks, he mentioned the Grizzlies, he mentioned the Kings. These are all teams with like the last five picks in the draft. So this is that's probably his range. And it only takes one of them to bet on him. I'd say they're both probably 50-50, but I think because I don't think the grave desire to play in the NBA right now at this moment is there for Kalkbrenner. I think he is comfortable, super, super comfortable with coming back to Creighton. Mm-hmm. I'd probably say 60-40 for him and then 50-50 for Trey.
So we're going to do a little Nebraska cross thread here for a second. When Delano Banton decides to stay in the NBA draft, he did so because the Toronto Raptors wanted to draft him as a hometown kid. He's from Toronto. I think he was the 42nd pick. I can't really remember. Now, nothing about Delano's college career would have indicated that he's not as good as Trey Alexander, for example.
Sure.
However, you know, he's 6'9", and he had a triple-double, and he has his skill sets, and he was from Toronto. I don't know. If Banton is from somewhere else, I don't know if he gets picked. But the bottom line is, he decides to stay in the draft, and Nebraska really had to scramble. And they decided to scramble, and they went out and got a kid by the name of Alonzo Verge from Arizona State. And he came in, and things weren't quite what they hoped it would be. If Trey decides to stay in the NBA draft, and we can talk about this next week if he does, but does Creighton scramble, or do they just go, nope, we like what we got, next man up?
They'll scramble, because you look at either of these dudes.
Well, who the heck are they going to get that's anywhere near as good?
That's a problem. I don't think you get anyone remotely as good. But you get a fallback option, and I'm sure they're looking at fallback options now. I've seen their name tied to Grant Nelson. I don't know whether he stays in the draft.
Tell people where Grant Nelson's from.
South Dakota, I believe. One of those Dakotas. I forget. But he looked okay in Chicago. I don't think that means he stays in the draft. I don't know. I'm not familiar with his camp or anybody there, any rumblings. But
why doesn't Baylor Sherman just become the point guard? He can.
I just think he's better as a secondary or third creator on a really, really good team. Now, sure, you could try to have him bring the ball up, and this is where Ashworth would come in more. But I think you looking at the lineup, let's say Mason Miller starts for them. Ashworth, blank. Shireman, Mason Miller, blank. Fred King, I guess, if both leave somehow. This is like your doomsday scenario. Or let's, you know what, just in case this is Trey Alexander, let's say Kalkbrenner does come back. Kalkbrenner's at the five. Who are you putting at two to relieve pressure off of Ashworth and maybe even Shireman? Because Mason Miller's not relieving pressure off either of those guys as ball handlers. Farabello, you can't, no. Huh. Lawson, he's fluid, but no. He's still young and not sure he's much of a pick-and-roll threat or capable much at all of creating his shot to that level, especially not to Travis Anders' level.
Right.
So you're looking at not only losing a solid or a good wing scorer who could also play in the pick and roll, this is a dual threat, but you're looking at the guy who you were going to give the keys to as your first option.
Yeah.
So regardless, I think there's probably a big drop-off.
So Creighton has a lot to sell Trey Alexander. Hey, buddy, you can come back. Nembhard's not here anymore.
Oh, they've been in his ear as much
as
possible.
This is your team. I mean, what's McDermott doing in Chicago? He was there, right?
Yeah.
Is he there?
He was there the last day.
Emotional support, or is he there to go, okay?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're there to watch him and I'm sure take him out to dinner. You know, let him know he's still part of the Creighton family.
Where are you going to dinner if you have to make that call?
I'm going where the steaks are 5 ounces and $200.
Okay, that's good.
Wherever that might be, I'm going there.
I don't know where that is in Chicago, but I'm sure they're good.
Everywhere downtown. You could probably go to Mastro's there are a bunch of places. So there would be a huge drop off because you look at the portal now. The portals, you're starting to see a few tumbleweeds probably cross the portal now. All the guys that you would have wanted probably got snatched up because people have been in their ear since either when the portal opened, when they entered the portal, or maybe even before then. Who knows with certain players? But even if we even if it was clear from day one that Trey Alexander wasn't coming back, I'm not sure how good of a guy they could have gotten from day one with a full pool of entrants.
Right.
That could have replicated what he did.
Very few.
Yeah. So
I agree.
It's a tough problem for them. And then Kalkbrenner is a similar thing. Like, Kalkbrenner is a walking defense, probably as good of a walking defense as there is in college basketball by now. And this is a guy who can transform you from, dare I say, a sub 100 defense to a top 20 defense almost by himself.
You sell a Final Four, they don't have Kalkbrenner, it's going to be almost impossible for them to make the Final Four. Yeah. If they have him, they can make it.
And Ferry King, I'm sure they're gonna have a full summer with him now, and they're going to put a lot into him, but yeah.
So he's not doing any overseas stuff where he goes somewhere for 4 weeks?
I don't know. Well, I know they're going to the Bahamas, and that'll be a home trip for him.
Well, there you go. So they get a whole summer with him. That's great.
Yeah. And so even still, the feel, I think, because of a guy for Fred King who hasn't played basketball nearly as long as Kalkbrenner, the feel isn't going to be there as a guy who you trust with your defense as much as Kalkbrenner, who proved through the EYBL that he was the best shot blocker, who proved for multiple seasons in college basketball that he's among the best shot blockers, if not the best shot blocker. It's going to take time for Fred King. It's obviously, I just don't know how much you trust. And this is why I bring up Grant Nelson. Whether he's a 4 or 5, whatever. I know he's been tied to them before. I don't know if he'll keep going through the process. This is not me attaching Grant Nelson, saying I'm confident in Grant Nelson being attached to Creighton. I'm just saying this is a possible name thrown out there should Kalkbrenner not come back, should Creighton face this doomsday scenario. I mean, they're going to have to scramble. They're gonna pick up people. They're not going to leave the roster as it stands should either of these guys leave, let alone both.
Okay. I think that's good. I'm going to make it short and sweet with Nebraska, and then we're going to get out. Keisei Tominaga is technically still in the NBA draft. He wasn't invited to the combines. He's working out with a few teams. I don't think the teams are going to tell him, hey, we'll draft you. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to give him feedback, and the feedback they're going to give him is, let's see a year, one more year of you. With 15 more pounds on you, let's see what you can do. And then next year, you have a chance of being drafted. I think if they don't tell him that, then they're like, listen, man, best of luck to you, but your skill set's never going to be what we hope. Then I think the likelihood of him going and playing Japanese pro basketball is there, like this year. But my sense is that his feedback is going to be, we see a potential there, but we need to see it for an entire year, and you need to do this, this, and this, and then we'll see. And a lot of what he needs to do is get better on defense. He needs to be more physical on defense. He needs to be more athletic there. He needs to be able to score in traffic, not as a cutter. You know, you're not going to have the opportunities that he's had cutting, but you know, being able to get into the lane. Fun fact, Keisei Tominaga shot 62.4% from two-point range last year as a guard, number two in the Big Ten. And that's because he's really good at finishing at the rim. It's not just because he was open. It's because he's really good at it. But he needs to find a way to actually dribble there, not just catch a pass from a 6'10 guy, because I think it just doesn't work like that in the NBA. So that's the feedback they're looking for. If he gets that kind of feedback, hey, come back next year, then I think you're going to see a positive momentum to him coming back, and then I think they feel like maybe they can be a bubble team. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit on the front court additions. I actually think they're going to be a hell of a lot better in the front court, even though they lost Derek Walker. I think the two players they added is worth more than one Derek Walker. And it's worth more than Derek Walker and the guy who left also, and Wilhelm Breidenbach. So I think a hell of a lot better. Maybe it's too strong, but they're going to be better. And then I think in the backcourt, they can hang. I don't know how good they're going to be, but I do think they think they're going to shoot the three better. Joel, they shot 32.6% from three last year in Nebraska. And that was the best. That was the second best number of the Hoiberg era. I'll tell you something. So fun fact.
Is that saying much though?
What's that?
Is that saying much though?
Well, here's what will say something to you. Nebraska has not shot 35% from three as a team since 2010.
Hmm.
Now, Creighton's done that about eight times since 2010. Not last year. Oh, were they a 35% team last year?
maybe hovering around that. Definitely not the year before.
No, they weren't. But I mean, they've had. I mean, they've certainly had years where they. I think they might have had a year where they topped 40. Anyway, Nebraska has not been 35 since 2010. And that year they were 39.7 because they had two good shooters. But that's how hard 3-point shooting has been for Husker basketball. And they must get better there. I mean, I know that sounds really reductive, but it isn't reductive. When you're this bad at doing it, you have to hit more shots. Now, in the last 10 games of the season, they were around 37-38%. What happened? They won like 8 of 10. And even though their best defensive players got hurt, they put guys on the floor who could hit threes, and they started to hit them, and all of a sudden they're starting to win games that they couldn't have dreamt of winning when they had. Here's another thing. They lost 3-point shooters, Joel, who were shooting 32.3. That was Griesel. 24.2? I don't know. Bandamel? I think he was 24.2. Derek Walker took 4 3-pointers in his entire career. And then they lost Breidenbach, who was like 22.4. This is the guys that left.
Mm-hmm.
So the 3-point shooting at Nebraska has been really bad. And it's going to get better. I think they could be a 35 to 36 to 37% 3-point shooting team. And you know what? That might be worth one or two more wins. And if Nebraska wins, let's say, 3 more games than they did last year, they'd be 19 and 13. And that's a bubble team in the Big Ten. Because
for sure,
it might be almost a bubble team in the Big East, because the Big East has gotten really good. But that's all you need to do. You need to win 19, 18, 19, 20 games, and you're on the bubble. And yeah. I think that's where Nebraska wants to be. We'll see what happens. But that's where they're at. Like, it's not nearly as exciting as Creighton. Kluman's gone, right? Like, he's gone.
Yeah. And
never come back.
And we've talked about this a bunch of times, so I don't think we need to dive into it. But yeah.
Okay.
But at the same time, like with Nebraska, like obviously the identities are just vastly different anyway, which is probably weird. It's weird that this is the identity now for Hoiberg teams, but they just are, man. And the personnels are different. Like Nebraska did some stuff that Creighton probably couldn't have done. Probably dug up into defenders more. Obviously, Creighton's a more conservative defensive team, and they drop back and they don't hound ball handlers, but so just different identities there. So
it's the biggest difference. One of the biggest difference between Greg McDermott and his predecessor Dana Altman was that, like, and I remember when Greg took the job in those first couple of years, and they had good teams. Well, they didn't have a great team the first year, but they did subsequently because Doug was there. And I would be like, Dana always picked up like almost right at the half court line, like it was get after their ass. And that was different with Greg. Like, they didn't do that. And so it was an adjustment, I think, for the team. Like, they didn't know it. They didn't right away. They didn't get used to it. And back then in the Mo Valley, which is what, you know, Doug was in, I think, for all but one of his years, a lot of the teams played just like in your shorts defense. Like, not Greg's team at Northern Iowa, but like Southern Illinois. It was really aggressive. Wichita State, really physical. And then there was Creighton. And yeah, you know what, though? It's been really beneficial for Creighton. Like, Creighton has done really good work with the defense that it has. Nebraska got better last year at it. But you want to talk about, yes, there's no question the identities are different. Hoiberg wanted to have what Creighton has, to be clear.
Okay.
They're similar, but they've had to change.
We can't kid ourselves, though. Hoiberg is a Kalkbrenner away from being able to. I mean, Kalkbrenner is the sole key as to why Creighton is now looked at as a two-way program for whatever reason, instead of just, you know, the run a gun and shoot the lights out program. I mean, Kalkbrenner is the sole he's Rudy Gobert for them, man. Like, when he leaves, I don't know what they're gonna do. I mean, you could try to bring along
from Fred Memphis is the answer.
Well, he's a wing. He's not gonna be a
drop. No, I mean the high school kid.
Oh,
sorry.
No, good grief. No.
Brock Weiss.
You could bring in
Brock Weiss.
Is that
his name, Brock Weiss?
Yes. Dare I say you could bring in a 5-star kid right now, and I don't know he'll do the same defensive job as Kalkbrenner.
That's true. That's possible. Maybe Brock Weiss is better than we think, though. Ryan Kalkbrenner was better.
But he's a different identity. He's not going to move like Kalkbrenner. He's not as long as Kalkbrenner. He's going to shoot better than Kalkbrenner.
I think
he's
a better offensive player.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but that's now we're just changing the conversation there.
I get it.
Speaking of changing the conversation, pretty soon here, when the portal, you know, when all the smoke clears, we're going to have to talk about Kansas. We're going to have to talk about some of these teams and the way they've shaped up, because Kansas looks like the best team in the country right now. They just got McCullough back today. So who was really, speaking of people who were bad at the combine, he was pretty bad at the combine. So.
Well, obviously the defending national champions will not win the national championship next year. Agreed?
Sure, yeah.
They're not going to, I mean, unless Sanogo comes back, and he's not going to come back, right?
No, I think it's,
so the two best players are gone. And they're going to be good, but I don't think they're going to win the national title.
Yeah, that's what's confused me about. And even if you did factor in one of those dudes coming back, like even if you did factor in Andre Jackson coming back, I never understood the, UConn is still a top three or five, even the best returning program. Like, it didn't make sense to me, even with a core. Like, I think the core they're looking at is like Carabin and, I don't know, like a few of those younger guys. Like, it never made sense to me. It never made sense to me.
And they're good, though.
Yeah, no, they'll be good. They'll be top 15, I'm sure. Top, you know, but
be top five. But I don't think they'll win the national title. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know, man.
You know what people are saying? Michigan State's going to win the national title. We'll talk about this in mid-June.
A lot of that was the Marquette win, too. A lot of that was the Marquette win. I don't know. And obviously, Izzo
is Izzo.
People
are just saying Michigan State's got the... The only thing I'll say about Kansas right now, we'll talk about this in mid-June whenever all the smoke is clear. Kansas signed a center who is temperamental, and everybody knows it.
He's one of the best, though.
He might be one of the best, but everybody in the Big 12 is going to know how to get under his fingers.
I don't know, man.
They will. They'll get into him. Big 12 is real stuff. Big 10, everybody's a gentleman. Everybody's a gentleman in the Big 10. You think Zach Edey ever had a day in his life where he's like, I'm gonna be a jerk to Hunter Dickinson? In the Big 12, they're West Virginia. Are you kidding me? So just keep it in mind.
I think maybe you underestimated Canadians, man. They got that dog in them.
Just keep in mind that in that league, they will be merciless toward him, and he doesn't handle that stuff well. He doesn't handle criticism. He's a very good player, especially when he gets to his spot. And he can turn and he can shoot and all that. But he never won anything at Michigan. The closest they came was 2 years ago when they had an accidental team get to the Elite Eight. All right. That's our Half Court Press podcast for this week. That might have been the longest one we've ever done. Right, Josie?
Yeah, not there.
Josie is the host of Even Field. So. She's also the producer on this one. For Josie, for Joelle, I'm Sam. Thanks a lot.